Big Little Besties, welcome to After Bedtime, where today we've got a very special guest with us, someone who has transformed mine and Kristen's parenting and pregnancy life, Emily Oster, who takes data and research and translates it so that you can cut through the BS and get down to what matters and leave behind what doesn't, since there's so much anxiety and fear around so many things in parenting. Let's go. Besties, you know that After Bedtime, this is a podcast where we navigate the wild world of parenting after our little ones have gone to sleep, but we can't forget our other little babies, our furry little troublemakers, our dogs. I have a little pug. His name is Moki, and we call him Momo, and he really is my number one baby. He was my first child. And at the same time, as much as we love our pets, we know they can get into some trouble sometimes. Let me tell you about a time that my sweet, sweet baby Moki got into a bit of trouble. My one-year-old was just learning how to do solids. He's practicing. I gave him a huge lamb bone. And the baby, being a baby, accidentally dropped it on the floor, and within seconds, I kid you not, I looked over. Before I could grab it, Moki inhaled the lamb bone all 6 inches in a pug down his throat. It was horrifying. We rushed him to an emergency vet, and thankfully, it was a 3-day journey. He is okay, but trust me, the vet bills, they were no joke. Speaking of which, we wanted to share a message from our partner Spot Pet Insurance, because Spot Pet Insurance plans can offer up to 90% cash back on eligible vet bills, which sounds like a game changer and something I wish I had on the Moki Lambone fiasco. Honestly, like, it was bad on top of bad when I got the bill. But now imagine getting up to 90% cash back on that bill. And the Spot Pet Insurance plan offers not only coverage for accidents and illness plans, but an optional preventative care benefit as well to help with the cost for routine wellness, vaccines, and more. And if you catch yourself thinking like, is it expensive? Let me tell you, it is probably less expensive than the unexpected $1,800 vet bill that I got served. Go to spotpetinsurance.com today and get a free quote instantly. It's very easy. Disclaimer, paid ad for Spot Pet Insurance. Waiting periods, annual deductible, coinsurance, benefit limits, and exclusions may apply. For all terms, visit spotpetins.com/sample-policy. Insurance plans are underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by Spot Pet Insurance Services, LLC.
Finally, here we are. It's after bedtime, the kids are asleep, and it is time to get down. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Dina. We're the duo behind the ever-popular Instagram account Big Little Feelings, which helps you navigate all things parenthood.
But this is not a boring parenting podcast. There will be inappropriate jokes, we will be getting down and dirty, so put those babies to bed, and let's have fun. Dina, girlfriend!
What's up, girl?
Hey. Holy shit, what a morning.
I know.
What a morning.
I know. We're doing a morning sesh, by the way.
That's the difference. Is this okay? Are you okay right now?
I don't know how I feel. Like, I have more energy.
You're a morning person. That's the difference.
I am a morning person.
That's the difference.
I even made you a whole snacky. You,
literally, in front of me, besties, there's a plate of strawberries and like a hard-boiled egg, but it's seasoned. You know what I mean? Just like so much love and care. The reason we're recording in the morning, by the way, is because we have a guest and she's on the East Coast and we love her. So we're like, anytime you would like to record, we will.
We'll be
record
there.
With you. I am having flashbacks of being in high school. Like, this felt like I rolled up. I was 15 minutes late.
You
at
did
least.
Roll
I had
in.
Seven different cups of different things in my hands. I have the coffee, I have the water, the sparkling water, the athletic greens, the smoothie. I have everything in my hand. I have sunglasses still on, sit down, and just roll right into this interview. You know what I mean? Just
can
like,
I
let's
admit
just pass
something?
This final. Fine. We're fine.
I've been to 2 cafes already this morning.
And like so much preparation, so much studying probably.
Yeah. Like
so
meditated. Much you know, took my kids out to a cafe, like had special mommy time already. It's crazy.
Okay.
But I'm a morning person. And I always have been.
Yeah. This is
Like you, you and a friend, by the way, was telling me you do this.
Yeah.
But like you switch off and someone sleeps in on a Saturday, yeah. someone sleeps on a Sunday, yeah. the other person takes the kids. Like yeah. I can't even do that because I literally cannot sleep in.
If you're with your children every weekend, I think you do like 3 cafes in the morning just yes. because it's not warm enough outside to That's go right. outside yet. Like even in the summertime because yeah. it's like the sun's not up yet.
Yeah.
And you're already hitting up like 3 cafes. Go, go, go. And then Luckily, when we're on vacation, what do you do? When you're on vacation, yeah. I think I'm going to be very honest
mm-hmm,
with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you wake up.
Yep.
You go to whatever the cafe version is, which is like breakfast yep. by yourself. Get the coffee. Sometimes it's emails. Sometimes it's writing. Sometimes it's reading something productive. But there's
Damn,
still,
you know me.
still
you know
a little
me
bit
so
of
well.
Like productivity before yep. you can start the vacation off. You yep. know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. yeah. Like a productive meditation to settle right in.
Like if you're lucky. That's like the most relaxing thing
Yeah, exactly.
thing you're gonna do.
It's
like,
often writing. It's often yeah. emails. Like yeah. just clear a few, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we can have a great day. That's exactly what I do. And then my husband has to bring both kids to breakfast. I'm like, round 2, let's do it.
I'm even talking about like solo vacations, though. When we go on a vacation together, like besties, you know, where we're like,
I do
okay,
it in both situations.
Gina, I'm sleeping in, like, see you at 10. And you're like, I'll see you at 10 after my like morning productivity session.
100%. Yeah.
Because then I can relax.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's very much how I am.
Speaking of how I am, I have to say today is... I think you can see this, Dina. Bestie can't see this. Today is day 1 of me putting on the matching sweatsuit. You know how right now all
I
the
noticed.
Moms are... Okay, you know how they're wearing like neutral matching sweatsuits, right?
Yeah.
You know I've been on the hunt for months, right?
Is yes.
like, where are people buying these? Like, is it Amazon? Is
you
it
walked
Target?
In the door. Like, is like, damn, you did it? Like,
dude,
where?
I did it.
How did you do this?
I have the mini Uggs too. I got the mini
wow.
Uggs that nobody can get. I got them somehow.
Wow.
Like, they shipped. I ordered them 6 months ago. I am on trend today.
You're living your dream.
Here's the problem, okay? I held off on the neutral sweatsuit for so long because I know when I slip this on, I'm never coming back.
There's no going back.
And
this is it. This is your new life.
This is my life for literally ever.
Yeah.
Forever. I will never put on a pair of even leggings again. Like,
wow.
Leggings are gone because it's all about sweatsuits. And the problem is this is a trend. This is only a trend. Like, people are not going to be wearing sweatsuits in 6 months. It's going to be jeans. It's going to be the next thing. It's going to be the next thing. I'm still wearing the sweatsuit, dude. I'm not going back.
I say be you. Be weird. That's 2024,
oh, yeah,
right?
I'm going to be weird.
I've been wearing black leggings for 5 straight years. It's not in. It's not cool. And I'm still going to be doing it.
It's going to come back, though. If I stay in the sweatsuit long enough, you stay with your
exactly.
side part.
The side
and
part
your leggings,
and the side bangs.
They're going to come back someday.
Hasn't been in since 2016. Side bangs?
It will.
I'm hanging
like,
on.
I think we're like a year and a half, 2 years away from side bangs.
Like, I can't quit. Now I've already gone through the worst of it, you know, but I have one key question.
Yeah.
Do your pants have pockets?
Dude, not only do they have pockets,
wow.
these are zippered pockets.
Oh,
so my
wow.
stuff doesn't fall out. I can even put a car key in here.
Stop
like a
it.
Man, like a man. I could put an effing
like a
credit card in here.
Man.
I could put anything I want in here and just keep it in my pockets. I'm never going back.
Order me some.
Is this
Order
what
me
men
some
feel
right
like?
Now.
They
it
feel
must be.
Comfortable
yeah.
and assured that the things in that they need are like safely inside of their pockets.
Yeah.
I'm
no
gonna
worries.
Order you, I'm going to order you a set.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay. I'm so excited.
Speaking of excited, I woke up at 4:30 a.m. because Emily Oster is on our podcast. It was literally Christmas morning. It wasn't even nervousness. I was just... so jazzed that
I'm
I couldn't
excited.
Go back to sleep. I'm excited.
I'm going to be a little starstruck. I'm not even going to lie. I'm going to be like,
oh
my
God.
God, Emily, you're here.
Is this going to be your Dorinda? Are you going to Dorinda this?
A little
this?
Bit, yeah.
Oh, Greystone Manor
I'm
this?
I'm scream,
I
just like you did.
That.
Right in her eyeballs.
Totally going to freak her out.
Yeah.
Let's do that. That Let's feels nice that. For me. That'll be like a little bit of redemption. That'll
yeah.
be nice.
Actually, I think she's almost here.
Oh my
let's,
God. Okay,
let's get her
this.
In here. Okay, we're big believers that small, easy changes can have big results. And that goes for your skincare routine too. These days, it's so confusing to know what product works for this and that and which work together in what order. So I'm just gonna make it easy for you. The Work System from Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, it's high-end skincare that's affordable, and it really works. Dime didn't sacrifice performance just to make it clean either. And when I say clean, by the way, Dime is 100% transparent about every single ingredient, so you can use their products daily with confidence. I do not have time to remember a 10-step routine. The Work System is everything you need in one powerful package. It includes a gentle cleanser, a toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. Plus, with spring and summer around the corner, I love anything with sunscreen. Their Tinted Glow Wonder Screen with SPF 30 just came out in new shades, and it's amazing. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Dimebeautyco.com. It's about time you've checked out Dime. If you follow us on Instagram, you know that Moki, my pug, he is my number one baby. He's my firstborn. I love him so much. But if I'm being really, really honest, ever since having kids, he doesn't get the attention that he used to. I do my best, but there's a lot going on. But one thing that makes me feel really good is we recently switched his food to the farmer's dog. And I cannot tell you how happy this little pug is every morning and every night when he's about to eat. Even my husband commented yesterday, he's like, I've never seen Moki prance around so excited. He loves this food. And I've noticed a difference where he does look happier, he has more energy, he just looks like a healthier dog. The Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced, and it's made from human-grade ingredients in safe, clean kitchens. Honestly, when you pour it, you can tell how real and how clean this food is. In hindsight now, I can really see how like traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed, and they can use so much lower quality ingredients than they claim to, and they're extremely difficult to portion accurately. And if you're using dry food or like store-bought food, no guilt. I did it for a really long time, but I now notice such a difference since I've switched him, which is why I'm here sharing the Farmer's Dog with you so you can incorporate it into your family. And one little detail that I love, it makes life easier, is the Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send you the right pre-portioned size specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. This makes it really easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. In fact, dogs at healthy weights can live as much as 16% longer than overweight ones, and that's 2.5 years. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, from healthier coat and skin to better breath and even easier digestion and smaller, better poops. Yes, poops matter. A healthy diet isn't just important for humans. Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/feelings. Let the Farmer's Dog know that we sent you. Use our code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
Hello.
Ah! Hey.
Hi.
We both did it. We were just talking about how we were not going to embarrass ourselves as
we
to how you're kind of a celebrity to both of us
too.
As
oh,
moms.
This is so nice.
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining. So first of all, let's just kick this off. In the world of parenting, and even before that, in pregnancy, there are just a million and one confusing opinions and anxiety-inducing messages, and honestly, just like judgy shaming about what to do, what not to do. I mean, it starts like in pregnancy, right? It's like, don't eat sushi or you're going to ruin everything. And then your baby comes and it's like, you should be co-sleeping or you're going to ruin everything. Or don't co-sleep. Now you're ruining everything. I mean, it just goes on and on. And someone who has helped Chris and I both so, so, so much as parents is today's amazing guest, Emily Oster. Woo-hoo. She is a professor at Brown, not a pediatrics or psychology, but economics. And Emily's incredible work, which includes your newsletter, which includes her books that we love, our faves, Crib Sheet and Expecting Better. Emily analyzes data and translates science around parenting and child development so we can cut through the fear, the judgment, and make informed decisions to weigh trade-offs and to distinguish like trivial and substantial risks, and ultimately just be more at ease and remember that we are not effing this whole thing up. Some things matter and some things just really don't. Like, big exhale.
Woo, Emily Oster, welcome to the pod.
Oh my gosh,
you are so
thank
legit.
You guys so much for having me. I am a big fan of your Instagram and what you do and your podcast. And I'm just, oh my God. I'm so excited you have me here.
Oh, we are excited. When you reached out in the DMs, I was, and actually, I think it was an organic thing where people in the comments of a lot of our mutual posts just kept being like, you need to be on each other's podcast. It was like, oh, we would be honored. And I think you responded to one of those. Like, I'd love to. We're like, really? Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Super excited.
Oh, my God. You mentioned sushi, Dina. I just want to say that my personal experience, that's how I found you, was 7.5 or 8 years ago at this point. And it was like the height of Facebook mommy groups, right? Instagram wasn't even there yet. It was like the height of like respectful sleep.
Those were the
groups
worst,
and
right?
Those were the
Facebook.
People think that Instagram is anxiety inducing. That is nothing compared to.
You don't even know what it's like to be in the Facebook,
the Facebook
mom group.
Mommy groups of 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So I found you that way because I loved sushi. It's my favorite food. It's ironically or not my daughter's favorite food now too. And I found you because I was like, can I really? And I ate sushi throughout my whole pregnancy because of you. Now she loves sushi. She went to Japan. She's 7. Correlation? Yeah. Probably.
Maybe. You know? Maybe.
Yeah, correlation, but also that's great. I mean, I think for me, a lot of sushi is a gateway for a lot of people.
It's totally
in this
the gateway.
I think it feels, it's one of those things where it's like, I like it. It's not like I can't live without it, but I would like to understand, is there any actual reason to not do this? And the answer is really no. It's very freeing.
Yeah. It really is. I love, that's like the core kind of essence around your work. Like, it's so freeing to be able to look at actual data and cut through all the BS and the fear that comes with so much of parenting.
Why do you think there's so many fear headlines that seem to be aimed at mothers? And maybe it's parents in general and it's not mothers. As a mom, it feels like it's aimed at us. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think the shortest answer, you know, I'm an economist and we tend to think that things are supplied when they are demanded in the market. And I think one of the things, I know it's, we're getting very technical. And I think what happens is that people click on those. So if you put up a headline that says, you know, studies show there's a mild correlation between screen time and children, but it's probably just driven by family background differences and you really shouldn't think about it. Like, no one's clicking on that. That headline sucks. The headline's like, screen time ruins your children. I got to find out like more about that. And I think we sort of generated an environment in which that is rewarded. And then you back up to like, okay, now it's sort of rewarded to write things, even if they are not causal, to sort of err in the direction of scary, because then you get media coverage and that's something people want. So there's a sort of cycle. But I think it starts with what people gravitate to in terms of wanting to read.
And we all love our kids so much, like we'd do anything for
and
them.
And that's
so
why you click on it, right?
Exactly.
Because you want to do it right. Like it comes from this place. We like all want to be right because we want to do the right thing because our kids are so important to us. And so if the suggestion we might be doing something that would damage them, it's like, I got to find out more about that.
Well, I feel like it's a real chicken or the egg situation though, right? Because I feel like it's a little bit rooted and anxiety, right? It has to be like,
fear.
Yes, we love our kids, but a little bit of it is like, oh my God, this is going to ruin them. Okay, click, right? And you sort of don't, at least I'll speak for myself. It is a little bit like you get heightened. It is anxiety where it's not like a logical, well, let me take this for a grain of salt. I will literally be like, oh my God, right? And it's a chicken or the egg, because then the more articles there are, the more anxious we are. And then the more articles there are, and then more anxious, and then we're clicking more. So then they put more articles out because you're clicking and that's what works. And so it's real. It's a real cycle here.
Reinforcing itself.
It's a hard time. And I'm to be a mom in that sense. And that's why I'm so grateful for your work, because it really is so succinct and so to the point where we don't have a lot of time. And we don't have a lot of energy. And whether you're reading, I read your newsletter this morning, I think it was about breastfeeding and like a few other things. And your work, whether it's your newsletter or your book or your Instagram, by the way, is just so succinct of where you're just like, yeah, don't fucking worry about that. And here I'm going to tell you why. I'll tell you now in this, you know, here's the data and here's whatever. But you'll really give it straight at first. And I appreciate that so much.
The thing is, there are some things that I worry about, you know, like occasionally people will be like, what do you worry about? I'm like, cars. Pools, Those yes. are my biggies.
No, there was one more. There was this is probably really creepy. You said the three things you were most worried about as a parent.
Cars,
and it made me feel so good about myself. And
cars, pools, and translating my own crap, my own like mental health crap to my kids.
Yeah, it was like emotional well-being or something. Yeah, emotional, you know, that whole cycle. And I was like, Emily Oster, me too. Like drowning, accidents, and social emotional long-term health. And
it's how all
I'm
this stuff.
Feeding into that. Yeah.
So it's not that I don't, like, I worry in some sense, like, I am quite an anxious person. I worry all the time about my kids. And I think part of why I write the way I do is the way that I have dealt with that is by trying to think about, okay, is this something I actually need to be worried about, or is the, you know, is the evidence suggesting I don't? And most things, when you ask them, you know, somebody in that newsletter this morning was like, you know, my kid's drinking the bathwater. Like, is that a big deal? And I was like, you know, here are the four things in the bathwater, like pee, poop, mold, and soap. And actually they're all fine in small amounts. So like, don't worry too much about it.
Don't worry about it.
Love it. You're like the effect of having the third or fourth baby, but for your first baby is what it is. You know what I mean?
You're exactly right.
Third, it's naturally that way. I forgot what my, actually, I probably shouldn't even share this, but he drank a little bit of something that probably he shouldn't have had, like literally a sip. And I just flashed back to when my first was born. She put the tip of a Crayola marker in her mouth. She didn't even eat it, okay? She literally touched it to her lips. I called 911. I think I called the pediatrician, but it was as if, like, it was a crisis. I had my husband come home from work. Like, it was
like
a crisis.
Emergency.
Yeah. And when my baby drank, you know, the other, poisoned. I'm not sure what it was. It basically, like, a teeny tiny bit about it. I was like, well, we're probably going to see what happens. You know, I mean, I'll know if this was a problem pretty soon. Yeah. And I feel like that's what you are. You're like, you know what? Is this? Yeah. Like, is this a problem? Probably not. There are problems. Like, I need pool gates. I need water safety. I need, you know, all car seat safety, very legitimate things that we need. And then there are other things where Emily Oster comes in and tells you, like, you know what? It's actually going to be fine.
Exactly. Like, girlfriend, don't worry.
The third kid point is so, it's so right. I mean, they sort of, I'll get these things from people who be like, my child ate one Honey Nut Cheerio and I'm worried about honey. And like, you always want to be like, you know, that's the first. And then the person who's like, listen, they ate like three large pieces of goose poop. Do you think I should call someone, or is that like fun? Because it's mostly grass.
I wouldn't even ask.
And you're just like, okay.
Fine. It's fine.
Vitamin D, whatever.
Yeah, just watch them for a bit, you know.
That's literally, I think, the answer is just like, you're not going to know.
They're probably going to vomit it up.
Yeah. And then I'll still be like, is this, you know, like now we should, you know, now we call it pediatrician. I have to tell you that this was the perfect day for this interview. I don't know if you've seen this one yet or not. This literally, I'm showing Emily.
Oh,
on the phone.
I saw that
I
one.
I scrolled across this on Good Morning America on their Instagram. It came up in my algorithm. Rude. I need to re-switch my algorithm. I'm going to read this for you because I think this is one you've already pinpointed is probably one of the biggest things everyone feels guilty about. The first part says in this post, for children under two, TV screen time is associated with sensory differences later in toddlerhood. Here's what parents need to know about the new study. I'm not even going to look at your face yet. Okay, swipe. For children under the age of two, television screen time is associated with sensory differences later in toddlerhood. Children who watched any television or DVDs at 12 months of age were twice as likely by 36 months to experience atypical sensory processing. That is, challenges in processing day-to-day sensory input compared to others of age. At 18 months of age, each hour of screen exposure was associated with a 20% increased likelihood of sensory processing differences, according to the study published in JAMA Pediatrics.
Okay, my child's ruined. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So okay. I read this, and I have three different kids, and one has sensory issues, and it literal instantaneously, and I'm kind of worried about her right now because she's having a little bit of a harder time. And instantaneously, I was like, I ruined her. They all three had pretty much the same amount of screen time, but I was like, oh, well, obviously, you know, Emily, please.
Yeah. So I read that post. I have a story about this post. Okay. So I read that post this morning.
Okay.
And I looked at the JAMA Pediatrics article. So let's like start with what's there.
I'm so glad. Okay, good.
And what they do in that article is they compare some kids in a survey, and they have information on how much television they watch, and they have some information on the sensory processing. And this is not a paper with a causal interpretation. It's a correlation, right? And there's a lot of differences across kids and families based on how much exposure to screens they have. Their results are like kind of mixed. Some of them show up negatively. Many of them show up as zero. There's some really like in the weeds technical stuff with the data. But I think the most important thing to take away from this, which I want to be clear, the authors themselves say in the paper, is that it is very difficult, impossible, to separate like screen time causes this from kids who have these sensory issues are going to potentially have more screen time because their parents may be giving them more screen time to address the sensory issues, right? So I think it's very common. If your kid has a lot of sensory issues, this can be something that can sort of pull them down, can relax them. And so you're likely to see the kids who are already having some sensory issues getting more screen time. And then if you see later they have more sensory issues, well, that's not the screen time. It's what we call reverse causality. The causality is basically going from the sensory issue to the screen time rather than the other way. So the authors actually say at the end of the paper, like, we cannot establish causality because of this particular issue. Okay. I commented that, including that quote, on that GMA Instagram post, and they restricted it. And they restricted my account.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Which I thought
you bring up a good point.
I found upsetting in the sense that, you know, look, we're all on Instagram. Like, sometimes people say rude things in your account and you have to restrict them. And I believe that people should be able to curate the feed, even public people. But I think a post that, like a response that says, you know, here's some context and here's a quote from the paper doesn't feel to me like a restrictable offense. But I also think it's like the reaction you had, like that's a reaction many people are going to have. Right. Yeah. I mean, the amount of panic that I see in my DMs with something like that. People are like, I ruined my kid. You know, one time I let my child watch 20 minutes of Coco Melon. Like, is that the end?
Oh, the Coco
Melon. Right. Like, they FaceTime their grandma one time. It's like there's so much panic that comes out. And it makes me sad that people read this stuff. And then I'm just like, I'm just out here trying to like let your FaceTime grandma and watch a little Coco Melon so you can like.
Trying to watch
like
Coco
make
Melon.
Dinner, you know.
Love it. Yeah.
Just trying to have some family time with someone who lives five states away. Like just trying my best.
That's so interesting. I will say we've only had positive experience with Good Morning America. Like
me
truly
too.
Overwhelmingly.
Me too.
Yeah, and you've been on Good Morning America. They pushed our interview back because I was having a miscarriage. Like they're
so
very so I'm gonna chalk it up to like some intern who gets scared all of a sudden.
It's
like, oh my god, this comment, you know, you're like, girl, you
can't. Good Morning America.
Yeah. Yeah, you like whoever. Like you know, Amanda people. This morning didn't, you know, she's
panicked.
Not helping the moms. Yeah, she doesn't get it. Okay. So can we also talk about that where, actually, I really want to ask about Coco Melon real quick.
Yeah,
can we talk
I'm
about
so
it real
so
quick?
Curious.
I know that's old news, but I don't know that I've heard it from you where that was the biggest. Is the Coco Melon thing real? But also then at the same time, does it matter when it comes to screen time in terms of quality programming? Two different questions.
So on the Coco Melon thing, you know, the origin of the idea that Coco Melon is like ruining your kid is somebody's not an expert. I mean, not like an academic paper research. Just somebody's widely shared view that like it's too the frames are too fast and that somehow could have some negative impact, but there's no evidence behind them. I mean, that's a theory. And if you looked at evidence, we don't really have any. Nobody's like studied Coco Melon, but there's nothing else really in the data that would say that like what you're watching matters, which is kind of the answer to your second question. Like basically we don't have anything that would say educational television is especially better. Now, I want to caveat that a little bit because like when Sesame Street first came out, so when kids are like sort of 3 to 5, actually Sesame Street turned out to be good for kids like kindergarten readiness. So when kids are like 3 to 5, they can kind of learn stuff from TV. And so if you said like you have to pick between one thing or another and they like them equally, like maybe there's some value to something that has some educational benefit. But I feel that for many people, some of the value of TV is, you know, this is a break. And that if we think about it more like how does some amount of screen time fit in terms of, you know, not taking away from family time, not taking away from other things, but being a place where people have a break, then I'm not sure that you need to be super rigid on like, you have to watch this particular thing because this is your opportunity to learn numbers. Like maybe this is just your opportunity for some screen time. And if you want to watch Caillou, actually don't watch Caillou because
nobody wants to watch Caillou.
Nobody I'm wants sorry, to watch Caillou.
I'm sorry.
But if you want to watch Coco Melon,
even like, I feel Caillou's bad.
Like the, anyway, so if you want to like
Daniel Tiger,
I'm not sure.
We should
go PBS usually.
Yeah, yeah.
Focused sorry, on that. Caillou. I mean, of course you want to be careful about content, right? You don't want your kid to be like. You don't want your 4-year-old watching.
Like age inappropriate stuff.
Exactly. Totally. But, so Common Sense Media is your friend, but like, is this their opportunity to learn algebra? No.
I'm not going to lie. There have been so many shows recently where my 3-year-old watches, and I'm usually watching because frankly, I use screen time to just cook dinner. Like, it's great. And we have a good time watching everything, but there are so many things he repeats later. I'm like, wow, you really learn that. Yeah, like, that's wild. Totally you learn something.
Yeah, they can totally
and on the
learn
opposite.
From.
That keeps going. So when they're 7, they can learn other things. And you're like, oh, maybe we're like, not going to watch the Bad Kitty show anymore, huh? That's they really are picking up things in there.
It's true. No, it's true because then my almost two-year-old, not even the other day, was talking about ghosts in his room. I was like, screen time, huh?
Yeah.
No.
Just scratching the surface. Now, I think this brings us to like, when it comes to screen time and us all feeling guilty, because I think even I, who have read your books, you have read books, you are literally a child therapist, we know all the logic behind it. I still feel guilty. I still do. If it's a little more in excess, I feel.
So do I.
Yeah, I feel guilty. Is there any, I guess, our reasoning here, or at least my reasoning is this going to give them a healthier me, right? Where if we're weighing out, and I think this is what you do in your book so well, you're weighing out all these different risks, right? Where it's like, okay, in a dream scenario, let's say, my dream scenario, let's say, everything is completely organic, made from fresh from scratch. I don't cook at all, okay? I literally don't know how to cook anything, okay? And they're never doing screen time, and we live on a farm, so they're outside all the time. We also have a mountain that we hike every single day,
so
and
like
I'm with them 24
like
hours a day.
You're basically, you're Ballerina Farm.
Emily,
you
we will talk about Ballerina Farm. I feel so bad about myself if I watch that,
I don't even know what that is.
Don't
I'm gonna be honest.
Oh, no.
What
hide
is
your
this?
Phone. The algorithm Sorry. Cannot bring this up. Dina will literally go off of a,
boy.
This is a bad thing. I watch it and I'm like, fuck this. I can never do that. And Dina would be like, I could do that.
My perfectionistic
perfect,
self.
You know? Yeah. Okay. So my point is, if I did all of those things and I'm with them 24/7 and we have no screen time, I just know this about myself. And I think pretty much every human being on earth, I would be a monster. I would be an absolute monster. I would be pushed to my breaking point. Not everybody would be, maybe, but I'd be pushed to my breaking point. I would probably be snapping and yelling and really unhealthy myself, not emotionally regulated. You don't have to be all the time, but I'd probably be like never emotionally regulated because I would just be drudging through all day. And so when it comes to things like screen time, it's like you have to take into account the entire holistic approach when it comes to data, because it's like, well, if they're saying a little screen time might have these risks, but there's also risks to having a depressed mother, let's say, right? If I'm postpartum and I just had a baby and I'm not letting my toddler have screen time because I'm so anxious that there might be something wrong with them. So I develop postpartum anxiety. This is a true story. So I develop postpartum anxiety in the meantime because I never have a break. Is that really good for her either, right? So you're weighing out the pros, the cons, the risks and whatnot. And I think we all land on a healthy, happy medium, right? Where it's like, this is a break and this is healthy for all of us.
I totally agree. I mean, I think we've gotten into a place where there's the first thing you said, which is like, here is the ideal. I think we've gotten into a place where like this idea of like intensive parenting has gotten we've gone very far in that direction that we kind of need to be doing with our kids all the time. I mean, when I was a kid, like, yes, I definitely watched them screens, but also a lot of the time my parents were just like, go away. Like, go outside, you know? It's like, and it's just like, what are you
come
doing
back
here?
When it's
like,
dinner time.
Yeah, yeah, like come back for food and then leave again. And so I think it was, you know, we've gotten into a little bit of a space where we have this idea that the ideal would be like everyone is playing wooden toys on the floor for like 9 hours a day. But I'm actually not sure that's even good for our kids to have that kind of that much access to.
That's
us.
Such a good point. It's almost kind of like wild that and this is what society has told us is the ideal. Like we've taken that in, you know?
Yeah. I do think that the way that is framed, though, that ideal, and this is where you come in, Emily, the way that is framed on social media right now is it's because of data, right? It's never because it's like one person or one influencer's, you know, opinion. The Cocoa Melo thing, yes. But everything else is always like Danish, Swedish researchers have found that when your child naps inside of a crib and not outside, you are damaging the health of the cellular respiratory, you know, like everything that you're saying in these ideals are quote unquote based in research.
Yeah. Pulling little lines from studies.
Yeah.
Right. And it is little lines from individual studies. Yep. And I mean, the thing we almost always miss about those is even if that were true, almost none of those effects are big, right? Mm. No one, like, even if it were slightly better for your kid to nap outside, like in the scheme of the things, like that's small. And therefore, it's like if you said, well, I'm a robot and I can implement everything anyone has ever shown to be a tiny bit effective. Like I can implement that because I'm a parent robot. Like, okay, sure. Maybe that's the way you program your parent robot. Who knows? But you're not a robot. And there are these trade-offs. And, you know, being happy or relaxed or feeling confident about the lifestyle you've built or, you know, having even saying like, so for us, screen time's before dinner. And so there's like screen time before dinner. You know, my kids are a little older. And so for my oldest one, she may or may not get it because sometimes there's like homework or violin or whatever. But like, basically that's the time before dinner. Like no one is with me and I'm cooking my dinner and it's like a nice experience. And then we come together for dinner. And because everyone is kind of like dialed down the cortisol or whatever it is with some relaxation, like dinner is really like can often, not always, but can often be like really fun and like our opportunity to connect. And I think if we had spent the 45 minutes before that with people like whining and complaining at each other, we would not have that part. So then how do you trade that, right? Like, I know how I trade it. And we thought about how we trade it, but I think it's not like maybe there's not a way to, you're not a robot is what I'm saying. You're not a parent robot. You're just a person robot.
And like, I think we underestimate our own needs when we're having all of these conversations. Like, it's just wildly left out of the conversation where
parents are people too, right?
And again, all of the studies showing like a healthy parent or a parent that can be somewhat present, they don't have to be perfect, but just in terms of like, I don't know, like they have a healthy lifestyle. They exercise, whatever it is, they can show up and be a little bit of a healthier parent. Like the effects of that are huge. They're insurmountable. And it's almost like we could even kind of sometimes put that first the way you just did, where it was like screen time helps us as a family have a really happy dinner. Done.
Well, next. I'm glad you bring this up. I feel like that's actually something to keep an eye on and cut through. That's become really popular in the past years is like a good mom in particular is someone who gives everything to her kids and puts herself last. You put your kids first. And you know what that really leads to is burnout. It leads to burnout. And then your kids aren't seeing a great role model of what it looks like to tap into your needs, to make them a priority, to take care of yourself. And then the cycle just continues.
Yeah,
totally. I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, I think we're modeling for our kids what we think is like a healthy adult lifestyle, you know, and sometimes saying like, I'm going to prioritize myself. And I'm going to do this thing. You know, I had this experience. So I did a marathon in December.
Good for you.
Running is like my self-care. And so there was this moment with my 8-year-old where like on Fridays, I was like not walking the kids to school because I like wanted to get to my long run like early. And so there was something I was like putting him to bed and I was like, all right, I'm not going to walk you to school in the morning. Like I'll say hi, but I'm going to go because I have a long run. And he was like, I want you to walk me to school. And I was like, no, I don't want you. I'm not going to do that. And he was like, you love your long run more than you love me. And I was like, not in the aggregate, but in the moment, like that's what I'm going to prioritize. You know, and it's like, it's so easy to be like, oh, you know, I don't want you to feel that way. But it's like, actually, like you're just saying, in this case, he was just saying things to try to see like what might come up. And then in the morning, he didn't care even for 1 second. But I think there was something valuable in being like, no, you know, it's not that I love my long, it's not really a meaningful statement, but I am going to choose this priority because that's also important.
Totally. I had to do it the other day too, actually. It was Saturday. I was going to work out. And then I was like, you know what? My body doesn't feel like working out. So I was just going to go to a cafe for 2 hours by myself. And then the 3-year-old had a hard time and was like, I want to come with you. I want you to stay. I'm going to miss you. You should play with me. And I literally got down and I was like, hey, I hear that you're feeling sad. And you know what? mommy needs to go take care of herself so that I can come back and I can be a patient and fun mommy. And I can't wait to play with you when I'm back. And it's good for moms to go take a little break sometimes and take care of themselves. And he kind of got it. And I was like, you know, awesome. This is good.
That's great. I don't feel like they always get that.
They don't always get it.
They always get that.
Maybe I'm just telling myself that and hoping that he got it.
It can be so tempting. And that's a journey for you. I feel like you 2 years ago, especially, would have been like, okay, honey, you know, I'm like, we all are. 100%. It's such a journey in your motherhood to figure this part out, because I think for a lot of, at least us, I don't know about your childhood, Emily, but a lot of us who grew up in homes that maybe weren't as healthy, so we have so much pressure trying to change generational cycles and do it just right, I feel like we tend to put ourselves last anyways in general. I mean, that's just something that comes out of living in a home like that. And so your needs and your worth is not on your mind. And the only way I was able to reframe it for myself was to say to them and to myself, in the instance of your run, Emily, would be something like, it's because I do love you so much. I need to be able to show up here and love you the most. Like, I'm doing this for me because I love you so much. And that was the only way I could really justify it at first, because I didn't love myself enough to be like, I need a run today. I'm going to go. That was never going to work for me. Yeah. I had to ease my way in to be like, wait a minute. I'm effing this whole thing up by being short and irritable and a martyr and taking care of everything and making all the snacks and making all the food. If I love them, I'm going to do this for myself. And that was like the baby step to get there.
Yeah, easing your way in. Yeah, you found your why.
Yeah.
And that why can change over time.
Totally. No, but I think that feels so important to me as a first step, which is to say, like, basically, if you are struggling to do this and you want to take that first step, you probably need to find something other than like, I want to, because I like the whole thing is like, I want to, that's not valuable. So for me, part of what has really helped with the running is, at least initially, it was like, okay, I'm doing this because like, this is healthy. Like, this is like, for, you know, it's exercise and you want it. And of course, like, my husband's like, at this point, he's like, well, I don't really think that number of miles is strictly. Now it's like, now I can be like, oh, well, it's just because I like it. But it was that initial step of being like, well, I'm doing this for extra. I'm doing this like because of, you know, cardiovascular health and longevity or whatever it is. And that was, for me, that was like the sort of step to start doing that. So
yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
When it comes to this idea of perfect parenting that we're all talking about and the unattainable standard, we've already talked about it. We're not doing it. F it. Is there data that shows, and there may not be, is there data that shows how much we really need to show up in a healthier way, let's say, meaning none of us can show up and be emotionally regulated and calm and loving and handle everything perfectly 100% of the time. Is there some sort of a benchmark or a percentage that any data goes to of like, kind of keep your shit together this much?
Not in the way you're looking for. No.
No, I mean, we're all looking for it.
It's a sort of tricky space. And I wrote about this like a few weeks ago. So in some ways, the like years between 0 and 3 are incredibly crucial, right? If you sort of look in the broader sense across sort of socioeconomic groups in the US, across like income, basically, what you see is you actually see quite big differences in sort of kindergarten readiness and early, any way you're going to measure that, when kids from early life differences. And so there's some things that seem to matter, but a lot of the questions that people that would ask me basically, or what are on the minds of the people who are probably listening to this, those are not the things that are important, right? It's things like access to quality childcare with like a, you know, a caregiver who is paying some attention to you. It's like lack of toxic stress, meaning, you know, a safe, consistent place to live and enough food all the time, enough sleep, a quiet place to sleep, you know, doesn't have to be like a silent, but like just someplace that feels safe. So those are the things, like providing an environment that is stable and consistent. You know, that's something that's really, really important for kids. And we have a lot of different ways to see that that's true. But that's sort of so far from the question of like, you know, is it okay if I give my kids some screen time, or if some of the time I like, you know, maybe I'm not as present, I'm on my phone, you know, this is really far from that. And so I think that's sometimes important for people to remember when we think about like, how are we trying to deliver for our kids? And when we think about public policy, like what should, like, it would be great if like the world provided a situation in which people did not have this kind of toxic stress with their kids. That probably isn't something individuals are going to have. That's something the government should be doing better, but that's a whole other
definitely down that rabbit hole. 100%. Like some support for parents, you know, and then we won't
paid leave
cycle.
It's a little paid leave, a little child care subsidy, you know.
I might be a better mom, you know. We all might, everybody in the U.S. might be a better and more present parents.
100%.
They, you know, had basic needs. So what you're saying though, I think, is that this is what I kind of always say to, we get the same DMs, obviously. It's just fear. Probably the same with you, where it's like 95% of the questions are, did I mess them up forever? Is it 95%? It could be about screen time. It could be about school. It could be about separation. It could be about divorce. It could be about anything. But the underlying question is, have I ruined them forever? Yep. And I feel like what you just said, well, that's a nice little checklist. I think at the end of a really long, hard day is like, I think we get so caught up on the details. And if you have that checklist that you just said, where it's like, what am I feeling guilty about right now that I gave waffles for dinner? Oh, Emily Oster said they need to be fed. Were they fed? Chuck, killed it. Did they, oh, I'm feeling guilty about screen time, blah, blah, blah. Did they have a roof over their head while they watched those screens? Oh, Emily Oster, that's a check, right? Like, if you're following a parenting Instagram account and then you're rolling into the DMs because you're so worried about your kid, you're probably doing a great job and you've hit those 5 checklists.
No, totally. Somebody once asked me sort of early on, they're like, gave me a long story. This is like at some event that was like, there's 2 preschools. Like one of them has, you know, they're like, all the teachers have a master's degree and one of them, only one has a master's degree, but it's in early childhood education. And I was like, if you are thinking about this, like you're fine. It does go to the one that's closer.
Yes.
That's it. Like, go to the closer.
Which one's better for you?
Like, because these are the same, you know, this is like, and at this point it doesn't, like, you're so far down the rabbit hole of having done stuff that's important that like, you just pick the one that's closer.
You should have seen my preschool spreadsheet when I was a first time mom.
I remember
I sent it to you because you were a child therapist, you know? So I had to be like, we need
therapy.
We need the literal, like Dan Siegel's mentee to weigh in on what preschool my daughter. It was, I mean, the spreadsheet was insane.
It was really extensive. I will say that.
Wow.
Like, maybe this is the same question, though, but is there data on how much yelling is too much yelling? It's kind of related to what we were talking about, but
only because it's probably the number one thing, again, that is, you know, our audience especially is worried about.
Not, you know, not really. And I think this is a place where I actually find the whole space of the literature, like, really hard to parse. You know, we have, I would say, you know, reasonable data that physical punishment is associated with bad consequences later.
What are those consequences, by the way? Do we know?
Mostly other behavior problems. So basically that it like sort of is associated with mental health issues and behavior problems later. But, you know, and then we have also a set of data that suggests that consistency in response is kind of the most important aspect of any kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a discipline program, but like any kind of like behavior modification, I don't know what words we're using, but that sort of doing the same thing every time so your kid knows what to expect is a really important part of that, both in terms of getting outcomes and in terms of kids like not being, in terms of stress. But the question of like, you know, I yelled at my kid, everybody yells at their kids. Like, everybody yells at their kids.
Say it louder. Yes, everyone yells at their kids. I'm a child therapist. I've done it.
Dina does. Your pediatrician does.
Yeah, it's everyone.
I think people say like, I don't want to do this. I like, okay, like, look, first of all, sometimes you're going to yell at your kids. Everybody yells at your kids. Yeah. It's okay. And then, you know, back up a little bit into like, okay, well, what, you know, what are the, like, this is much more Dina than me, but like backing up into the situation of like, what is it about the world that is like having this happen more than you want? Sort of if, particularly if you're saying not like occasionally I yell at my kids, which everyone does, but like, you know, this is happening more frequently, to ask like, what are those situations? Is there a way to react to them differently? Like, what can we put into place so we're not having that situation? I think that's that kind of like advanced planning is part of all of this sort of deliberate parenting.
Yeah. As a child therapist, I always think of it kind of like this, where it's like, what is your ideal go-to approach? What are you being consistent with? If your core belief is that kids are going to behave better and learn better by you punishing them and threatening and yelling at them because you're the parent and they should respect you and so they should be yelled at to do what they're supposed to do, you know, that's different than the flip side that we're talking about is I am a human being who has hard days myself and I'm tired. And sometimes I just run out of bandwidth and I snap, you know, and then I repair with my kid and I explain that I was having a hard time. This wasn't about you. And I'm going to work on having my big feelings without yelling at you. And I'm really sorry.
You know? And newsflash, your kids someday are going to be adults, right? Yep. So someday your child will get angry. And yes, we want to show them how to healthily deal with anger. So some of the times, hopefully we can do that, even when you're in traffic, right? Like, I'm guilty of it too. But like, a great way is when it's not with your kid to try your best to model anger, where it's like, I'm feeling really frustrated at this car in front of me and nothing I can do. You know what I mean? Like, you can model anger in that way. Yep. But your kid's going to snap someday. They're going to make a mistake. We're all human beings. So it's actually kind of healthy for your child to see you mess up, make the mistake, own that mistake, and they can see afterwards what that looks like. It doesn't need to look like going into a shame hole or never talking or leaving things really weird. And then you wake up the next morning and everyone's yelling again. They can see, okay, when you get angry and you make a mistake and you snap at somebody, here's what you do. You take ownership. You say, I'm so sorry. And I'm going to go take some deep breaths and I'm going to work on it next time. And what a great thing for them to learn.
To learn that they're human too. I think what we're saying is we're crushing it.
I think everyone listening to this podcast is crushing it.
Everyone listening to this podcast
is
crushing it.
I'm going
to
guess right
there.
That's
right.
You're doing a good job. It's like the big time adulting thing where at the end of all of her
lectures,
she's like, get yourself a snack. I feel like a tagline. Be like, you're doing a good job.
Just eat a snack. Just get yourself a snack, girl. So speaking of your kids watching you, I listened to one of your podcasts. Oh my gosh. Please remind me who the guest is about grief, parenting with grief.
Marissa Lee.
That was one of the most impactful podcasts I think I've ever listened to as a parent. I mean, can you give like a little summary of especially what, I don't know, is there data there? Was it just opinion based on when you yourself, a parent, are having a hard time? You're going through grief. That could be loss. I mean, there's anything, miscarriage,
divorce,
death,
change.
It could mean so many things. How you can show up as a parent while you're grieving.
I mean, I think in some ways, a lot of what we were talking about there is this same idea of making it okay for you to be having a hard time. And it's okay to say that. I mean, so Marissa has a two-year-old, and even with her two-year-old and with my own kids, when, you know, my mom was sick, like being able to say, like, I'm having a really hard time and I need some space or I need this is okay. And so I think just that, a lot of what we're talking about there is how you show up and be honest with your kids that you are struggling, because it's hard. And all of these same instincts that make us want to, you know, be the martyr or be the person who never has a problem, I think, come up against limits when something, when you are really grieving something, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to say like, I'm stressed at work, whatever, I'm trying to like push through it. But if it's like, you know, my mom is going to die tomorrow, like that's not, you're not like pushing through them being like, well, let's I'll go to Six Flags and like, I'll pretend everything's fine. Like you just, they're just not. And I think pretending that we're able to do that is almost the extreme form of some of this self-sacrifice. And we're really talking about the idea of like, you don't have to do that. Ask for help, get help, and tell your kids what's going on and in age-appropriate ways.
Exactly. And as a child therapist, that actually impacts the kid in a great way because kids can pick up, they can feel what's going on around them. They can feel when we're off, when we're struggling. And so when we help them make sense of it, it actually helps them feel safer and feel calmer when they understand what's going on.
Yeah, it's like, and especially for kids who are pretty new to this world, it's like the thing itself is scary. It is, it feels insurmountable for us as adults, right? To look your, oh, I don't cry, but to look your child in the eye and say whatever it is, right? Where it's like, grandma's dying. That seems scary and insurmountable. But to a child, what feels scary and insurmountable is not knowing, is, yeah, is sensing and watching everything be different and having, is it me? Is it, dude, did I do something? The not knowing is scarier than the thing.
Exactly.
And they're going to face those things. And that's what brings, like, breaks my heart too, is, yeah, like this actually, I think when you go through a hard experience and you share that with your kids, you have that realization that's also kind of scary. It's like, this actually won't be the last time that they'll face, yeah, this, right? Or that we will face this as a family. So all you can do is show them how you can show up. And wouldn't we say like, hey, honey, let it out, you know, cry. It's healthy to, yeah, cry. So we should probably do that and let them see that, you know, that's what we, totally, want them to do. Oh, that episode, yeah, was just like perfect. It was perfect.
Thank
timing.
You. Marissa is like, I found Marissa actually when my mom passed. Somebody sent me like a podcast she had done, I think on like We Can Do Hard Things, and was like, you should, you know, listen to this. And I read her book and she's just like, she's kind of perfect.
She's that perfect. She's perfect. We can agree on that. Do you have one final question? Because mine would be about kinder readiness, but I wonder if yours is
No,
better.
Hit us with it.
You want me to hit it?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
That was actually on my mind too.
This is your other bread and butter. I think, yeah, I think sushi, and I may, if I may, because I'm your target demo, a very anxious mother.
A very caring mother,
yeah,
who loves her children.
Loves her children. Go to therapy weekly. I go to therapy weekly. 7 years, you know, I'm working on it. I feel like sushi is the gateway to your first book. And then, which is Crib Sheet. And then I feel like kinder readiness, correct me if I'm wrong, kinder readiness and red shirting them and that whole debacle is like the intro into Family Firm. Like that's, yes, why. Okay. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that sounds
okay.
Right. Yeah.
So red shirting, it's this thing. Do you want to briefly explain what this concept even is?
Yeah, sure. So red shirting in this context yes, refers to the practice of holding your kid, typically a kid with like a summer birthday, back a year, so they enter kindergarten a year later. So rather than being, you know, just five, when they enter kindergarten, they are
a fresh six.
They are just six.
Yeah.
And the, yeah, idea is that, you know, people would do this so their kids would be basically perform better in kindergarten, you know, get a leg up, similar to the origin of this word, which is like in college football, right? Mm-hmm. Where you sit on the, you wear a red shirt and sit on the bench for your first year. So you, then you're bigger and can hit people harder in future years. Yeah. So in kindergarten, it would more be about reading than hitting, but you know,
sure,
whatever.
Same thing.
Sure. Also oh, hitting.
And I feel like, I mean, this is somewhat of a recent, I mean, when the grandparent generation hears this, they're like, what? I mean,
yeah,
you're a September birthday and you were fine. And yeah, I just have to say, I wasn't fine for everybody listening.
I was little in my grade too.
Yeah. I was a September birthday and I ended up actually redshirting, if you will, in seventh grade. And I really wish that I would have redshirted in kindergarten because I have such distinct memories of just not being there. Definitely with, I mean, I'll never get there with math, even as a 37-year-old, but in those concepts that were harder to grasp, being a year younger did not do me any favors. And even socially and emotionally, there's such a big gap in terms of a year, and all kids are different, right? Yeah. So if I struggle a little more in that area, it makes sense. So what is your opinion? What is the approach when it comes to people who are on the fence of a blanket approach of like, well, it's a summer birthday, I'll just hold them back, versus like being a little, yeah, more nuanced about it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what the data, like what we see in the data is the one sort of thing that seems to be kind of causally related to entering at a younger age is behavioral diagnosis like ADHD. So is there to think about kids who are entering younger, especially boys, are sort of more likely to get that diagnosis. And that's true, like, not because they're more likely to have it, but because it seems like it is true because you're comparing them against kids who are on average older, right? So if you're just five and, you know, there's somebody who's six in the class and the expectation in kindergarten is we like all are able to sit still and learn phonics, like you're a lot less likely to be able to sit still and learn phonics because you're five.
Because your brain hasn't developed.
Like your brain hasn't developed. Yeah. And so then it's sort of relatively, in some environments, sort of easier to for teachers to be like, oh, well, this kid is having, you know, is sort of struggling with this. So that is kind of the main sort of database thing that we see. And I think for me, it argues for like a very like thoughtful, nuanced parent, kid-specific approach to this, right? So on average, boys are sort of more likely, I think, to need more time, but not every boy would need more time. And it's much more in the data here. This would suggest it's much more about socio-emotional development or the sort of behavioral side than it is about like, do you know all the colors and like, do you know the letters, which, you know, there's a lot of variation. And it is true that kids who enter kindergarten older, like test better in kindergarten, but those effects go away by like second or third grade, whereas the effects on these kind of diagnoses persist because the diagnoses persist. So there are people, I mean, it's an interesting space because there are people who would say, there's a guy named Richard Reeves, whose view is like, every boy should be redshirted. Just like blanket thing, like expectation should be like boys take an extra year. And then there are people who are sort of more in the middle would say basically like there should be an option for a second year of pre-K. That the way that like the school system should be structured is like formal school starts at, you know, the sort of year before kindergarten. And some kids do two of that. And then some kids go. And that's for me, that feels like a, like if we could manage that in a public policy sense, that would be like perfect.
Yeah,
because that would be perfect.
I'm curious as we talk, obviously there's no data here at all. This is just three women sitting in a room. Do we think that girls are being left behind in this conversation because they're not exhibiting giant symptoms? Like let's I'm just saying for myself or even for, you know, one of my kids who I decided to redshirt. If a girl is quiet and complacent, but they're still having a hard time in terms of maybe they're not the most outgoing, maybe they're, you know, a little bit meeker, they're a little bit milder, and we're not really accounting for like she might be stronger, she might be more confident with the red shirt situation. I feel like a little bit girls are kind of left out of the conversation equation because it's not, it's almost like girls being left out of the ADHD diagnosis, by the way, because it looks exactly, it looks so different where we're so worried about these boys kind of, you know, rightfully so, because it can maybe be violent behavior or it's bigger, right? It's scarier. It's this. It's so let's get a control on it. Yeah. Whereas girls, ADHD, or even in this case, I feel like the struggle is presented in such a different way that we're not really paying attention to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the overall reaction to this has to do with the fact that like boys don't seem to be doing great lately. Like they're, you know, they're graduating at lower rates. They're less likely to go to college. Like there's a lot of reasons why sort of people have started to talk about issues with boys. But part of the reason I don't like some kind of blanket thing that's like redshirt all the boys is, of course, it misses that like there's going to be variation in girls and how ready they are in a variety of ways. And it's probably different than the ways that boys are ready. So, you know, I think we need to take a little bit more of a thoughtful approach to early childhood that would acknowledge that just like between the ages of 4 and 6, kids are moving forward at, it's like that age. And then it's like this adolescence period, the sort of like 6th, 7th, 8th grade where like there's just a lot of variation. And that's where you see the boy girl stuff show up also.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, their brain goes through another crazy growth development period during the teen years,
which is a whole other source of
whole other podcast,
whole other thing,
whole other
ball of wax,
whole other Instagram page.
This has been amazing,
Emily.
This has been amazing.
Thank you, guys. I don't want to stop.
I know.
I want to chat forever. I have so many questions, selfishly, that I will wait for the next time that you're on the podcast or we like meet somehow in person someday.
Oh, yeah. We should like meet and have coffee.
I would love that. Where are you? Where do you live?
I live in Rhode Island.
Okay. I don't know if that's a part of my journey, but I'll make it a part of my journey. We're in Denver.
Okay.
Yeah. We got to meet sometime. Let's do it. Let's
figure it out. I was in Denver. You know, I was in Denver. This is like 6 months ago in September for a conference. And I had a really terrible accident with a bike while I was running and I ended up in the ER. So I can tell you what I know.
So
the main thing I know about Denver is your ER is fantastic.
Oh,
it really well, is great here.
Nice. I bet it was so loving. That was terrible.
I was sorry about the staples in my head, but I was really like a huge fan of the ER. God. Like that was lovely.
I remember literally watching this, by the way. It's probably very creepy, but we got it all the time. I remember watching because I think you shared something at first where you're like, I was hit by a car, and then it just went blank. And all of us were like, is she okay? And you know, it was like you showing up however many, you know, in the ER, being like, I'm fine, guys. We're okay. I just have
just
a
few staples
like,
in my head.
Emily, like,
no big deal.
Oh, God, we were all so worried. Yeah,
well, we're glad you're okay.
What would I do without Emily
Oscar?
And
come back, give us another try one day.
Please.
Give Denver another shot.
Please.
We can do better than that, I promise.
thank you guys so much.
Thank you for coming on our pod. We love you.
Until the next time.
Yeah. Until the next time.
Oh, how do you feel?
That was so fun.
Oh, my God.
I didn't want to stop.
Are we best friends with Emily Oster?
I love her.
Is this like the Andy Cohen thing where it's like slight delusion or are we? I feel like we actually might be friends.
I think we're friends.
Wow. Wow.
I want to have a coffee with her.
Wow. That was like wild.
Yeah.
You know how long we've been reading her stuff. And,
I know.
And like to actually talk to her.
This was a dream come true for me. The data nerd that I am.
Yeah. Like how do you feel better? I feel better just talking to her about like I feel better about every choice I've made.
Literally
as a parent.
Everything. I never feel this way where I'm like, wow, am I crushing it? But now I'm feeling it all of a sudden. I'm like, literally. I'm doing a damn good job. What?
I'm not joking. That's why I follow her on Instagram. And I'm telling you, I'm not just saying this because she's on her podcast. I mean it when I say her newsletters, because like newsletters, they kind of suck, right? Like
no,
they're just like, nobody wants a news.
Amazing.
I need her newsletter every single week because it's like, oh,
yeah.
You get an
instant
cool.
boost where you're like, okay.
Oh, I feel like that's my takeaway. Today is like I'm gonna keep mantraing and channeling those like top things she said of like positive outcomes in children, of like literal basic food, like do they have access to food and they're eating, safety and shelter, do
That's
they feel
right.
safe, do they have a roof over their head, and do they have somewhere nice to sleep, like just not even nice, just like somewhere
quiet we're doing it
to sleep. And I'm just gonna keep that was my favorite takeaway. I'm gonna
That's
keep mantraing
right.
that like
yeah felt really good.
Did a really good job today.
Yeah, we need this perspective. We really do, especially in this crazy time of parenting where everything's flying in your face.
God, I love her. Let's go for a run in Rhode Island. Should we go to Rhode Island?
Yeah, do you want to run?
I might.
Okay.
Yeah, like how you say.
We could all jog
Probably
together.
Yeah,
like
I'll do whatever. I'll do anything. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'll be behind you in the sweatsuit with my coffee and my smoothie.
Take
I'll
a video
meet you
of
at
me.
10 at the brunch place. We all know I'm not going to show up. Bestie, it was so nice hanging out with you. We love you. We can't
this
wait for next
so
week,
fun.
Besties. It's 10 o'clock. What are we even going to do with our day?
I don't know.
Oh, this
let's
is nice.
Let's go hang out.
This is cool. Yeah, let's
you
get breakfast.
Hang out with
I'm
me?
Starving. Yeah, let's hang out. Bye. Bye, bestie.
Besties, this was a great episode. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling fired up to go back to parenting. And at the same time, the toddler, the preschooler years come with many, many unique challenges, from bringing a new baby into your family to hitting, tantrums, discipline, another area where there's a million opinions of how to approach behaviors. Here's the thing. You are a great parent, and sometimes great parents need help or they need some fresh strategies. Our course, Winning the Toddler Stage, is the world's best-selling behavioral course for a reason. It is rooted in science, but written by two busy moms, and literally is one course that has everything you could possibly ever encounter or need for ages 1 through 6. I'm talking bedtime, picky eating, discipline, tantrums. It is all in this one course. This is the Toddler Preschooler Manual that helps you take the guesswork out of behaviors and discipline. And you can find it on our website at biglittlefeelings.com/courses. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at biglittlefeelings, where we have the best community of parents. No joke, it's so supportive and amazing, and we offer free tips there all day long. Thank you so much for being here with us. This has been an Odyssey production, executive produced by Lauren LaGrasso, produced by Daniela Silva, edited by Bob Tabador, and theme music composed by Liz Full. Then studio lighting designed by Shane Sackett and designed by Jackie Shearman. Special thanks to Odyssey Executive Vice President and Head of Podcasts, Jenna Weiss-Berman. And thank you for being here with us. We can't wait till next week.